Let's read together Lamentations chapter 2. In this second lament, we have the continued description of the devastating conditions prevailing in Jerusalem as a result of the Babylonian invasion and destruction of the nation of Judah in 586 BC. This chapter emphasizes the fact that this catastrophe was the direct result of God's judgment against the nation because of her sin. Let's begin by reading the first 10 verses. How the Lord has covered the daughter of Zion with a cloud in his anger. He cast down from heaven to the earth the beauty of Israel and did not remember his footstool in the day of his anger. The Lord has swallowed up and has not pitied all the dwelling places of Jacob. He has thrown down in his wrath the strongholds of the daughter of Judah. He has brought them down to the ground. He has profaned the kingdom and its princes. He has cut off in fierce anger every horn of Israel. He has drawn back his right hand from before the enemy. He has blazed against Jacob like a flaming fire, devouring all around, standing like an enemy. He has bent his bow with his right hand like an adversary. He has slain all who were pleasing to his eye. On the tent of the daughter of Zion, he has poured out his fury like fire. The Lord was like an enemy. He has swallowed up Israel. He has swallowed up all her palaces. He has destroyed her strongholds and has increased mourning and lamentations in the daughter of Judah. He has done violence to his tabernacle as if it were a garden. He has destroyed his place of assembly. The Lord has caused the appointed feasts and Sabbaths to be forgotten in Zion. In his burning indignation, he has spurned the king and the priest. The Lord has spurned his altar. He has abandoned his sanctuary. He has given up the walls of her palaces into the hand of the enemy. They have made a noise in the house of the Lord, as on the day of a set feast. The Lord has purposed to destroy the wall of the daughter of Zion. He has stretched out a line. He has not withdrawn his hand from destroying. Therefore, he has caused the rampart and wall to lament. They languish together. Her gates have sunk into the ground. He has destroyed and broken her bars. Her king and her princes are among the nations. The law is no more, and her prophets find no vision from the Lord. The elders of the daughter of Zion sit on the ground and keep silence. They throw dust on their heads and gird themselves with sackcloth. The virgins of Jerusalem bow their heads to the ground. Let's begin our study of this chapter of God's Word, Lamentations chapter 2, with some background notes. In the Septuagint, which is the ancient Greek translation of the Hebrew Old Testament, a superscription to Lamentations is written at the beginning of the book, which says, quote, Jeremiah sat weeping and lamented with this lamentation over Jerusalem, end of quote. Jeremiah is known as the weeping prophet from what we read in both the book of Jeremiah and the book of Lamentations. I'm reading Jeremiah chapter 9 and verse 1. Oh, that my head were waters and my eyes a fountain of tears, that I might weep day and night for the slain of the daughter of my people. Jeremiah chapter 9, verse 1. And now here we see in Lamentations chapter 2 and verse 11, my eyes fail with tears, my heart is troubled. Lamentations 2:11. Why was Jeremiah weeping? Answer, because of the sin of God's people and the resulting devastating conditions in Jerusalem and the nation of Judah, as God, in his judgment, allowed the enemy Babylonian forces under Nebuchadnezzar to overrun Jerusalem and burn the temple and take the people into captivity with great loss of life. The entire book of Lamentations is a series of funeral dirges in moving Hebrew poetry, lamenting the tremendous loss of life and property and the horrible conditions that occurred when Jerusalem fell to the Babylonians in 586 BC. Here in Lamentations chapter 2, what is especially emphasized in this lament is the fact that God allowed all of this turmoil and tragedy to take place as a direct result of his judgment against Jerusalem and the nation of Judah because of their many sins. And that brings us then to our doctrinal points for Lamentations chapter 2. Doctrinal point number one, the wrath of God against sin results in national turmoil. The wrath of God against sin results in national turmoil. Verses 1 through 10. In these verses that we just read, the first thing we notice is that it was not Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonian forces that were the cause of Jerusalem's devastation and desolation, No, it was the Lord himself. And it was because of the anger and wrath of God. Verse 1, in the day of his anger. Verse 2, he has thrown down in his wrath the strongholds of the daughter of Judah. Verse 3, he has cut off in fierce anger every horn of Israel, that is the strength of Israel. Verse 4, he has poured out his fury like fire. And verse 6, in his burning indignation, he has spurned the king and the priest. But wait a minute, you say. I thought God was a God of love. I didn't know he got angry and had wrath. Yes, God is a God of love, but he is also a just and holy God, and he hates sin. Therefore, he does get angry when people sin. Psalm 7, verse 11 says that God is angry with the wicked every day. Now, notice the national turmoil that resulted in Judah and its capital city of Jerusalem because of God's wrath against sin. The glory of Israel as a nation was lost, verse 1. Many people were killed, verse 2. Judah was humbled with no national defense, verses 2 and 3. The nation's infrastructure was destroyed, verses 4 and 5. God allowed his beautiful temple to be destroyed, and he rejected the heartless worship of his sinful people, verse 6. Even the enemy had entered the holy place of the temple, verse 7. The walls of Jerusalem had been broken down, verse 8. The city gates were no longer a protection for the people, verse 9. The nation's leaders were either captives on their way to Babylon or helpless in grief, verses 9 and 10. What a sad picture of a nation in turmoil. And you know, the same could be said and could be true of our own nation in the not-too-distant future. The further this nation turns away from God and the moral and spiritual values and standards of Scripture, the more the wrath of God will be revealed with its resulting consequences. The wrath of God against sin results in national turmoil. Doctrinal point number 2. The wrath of God against sin results in personal tragedy. The wrath of God against sin results in personal tragedy. Verses 11 through 22. Now, as we read these verses, take note of all the personal pain and grief that was associated with the fall of Jerusalem. All of this, of course, was part of the sad fallout that comes when people turn away from God. We see in verses 11 and 12 that children were starving in the streets and dying in their mother's arms. My eyes fail with tears. My heart is troubled. My inward parts are poured on the ground because of the destruction of the daughter of my people, because the children and the infants faint in the streets of the city. They say to their mothers, where is grain and wine? As they swoon like the wounded in the streets of the city, as their life is poured out in their mother's bosom. In verses 13 and 14, we see the personal grief that comes when people believe the false peace that is preached by false prophets, then and today. How shall I console you? To what shall I liken you, O daughter of Jerusalem? What shall I compare with you, that I may comfort you, O virgin daughter of Zion? For your ruin is spread wide as a sea. Who can heal you? Your prophets have seen for you false and deceptive visions. They have not uncovered your iniquity to bring back your captives, but have envisioned for you false prophecies and delusions. In verses 15 through 17, we see that part of personal tragedy is to be identified with a nation that is mocked and despised by everyone. All who pass by clap their hands at you. They hiss and shake their heads at the daughter of Jerusalem. Is this the city that is called the perfection of beauty, the joy of the whole earth? All your enemies have opened their mouth against you. They hiss and gnash their teeth. They say, we have swallowed her up. Surely this is the day we have waited for. We have found it. We have seen it. The Lord has done what he has purposed. He has fulfilled his word, which he commanded in the days of old. He has thrown down and has not pitied. And he has caused an enemy to rejoice over you. He has exalted the horn of your adversaries. In verses 18 and 19, again we have the personal pain of seeing your children dying of starvation. Their heart cried out to the Lord, O wall of the daughter of Zion, let tears run down like a river, day and night. Give yourself no relief. Give your eyes no rest. Arise, cry out in the night at the beginning of the watches. Pour out your heart like water before the face of the Lord. Lift your hands toward him for the life of your young children who faint from hunger at the head of every street. At the beginning of verse 20, we see that during the year and a half starvation siege of Jerusalem, cannibalism was practiced, even the horrible act of women eating their own children. The beginning of verse 20, see, O Lord, and consider, to whom have you done this? Should the women eat their offspring, the children they have cuddled? From the end of verse 20 to the end of the chapter, we see that the slaughter in Jerusalem was like a day of sacrifice when a great number of animals were sacrificed. Only in this case, it was not animals, but people, young and old, prophets and priests, entire families wiped out. The end of verse 20. Should the priest and prophet be slain in the sanctuary of the Lord? Young and old lie on the ground in the streets. My virgins and my young men have fallen by the sword. You have slain them in the day of your anger. You have slaughtered and not pitied. You have invited as to a feast day the terrors that surround me. In the day of the Lord's anger, there was no refuge or survivor. Those whom I have borne and brought up, my enemies have destroyed. What a terrible tragedy. You know, some folks will always find fault with God for allowing such conditions. The truth is that in God's moral universe, these are all the direct consequences of sin against God. The wrath of God against sin results in personal tragedy. Now, what about practical application from Lamentations chapter 2? For godly gain, expect some personal pain. For godly gain, expect some personal pain. Hebrews chapter 12, verses 5 and 6 says, my son, do not despise the discipline of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he disciplines, and scourges or chastens every son whom he receives. Hebrews chapter 12, verses 5 and 6. Would anyone here this morning dare to say, I'm a perfect Christian. I don't need any discipline. I don't see any hands. Well, we see in verse 11 of Hebrews chapter 12 that God's discipline involves personal pain. Now, no discipline seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterward, it yields a peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. Notice, now no discipline seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. We see this truth illustrated in the book of Lamentations. Because of Israel's sin, God had to bring down his acts of discipline on his people. It was very painful, but it did result in godly gain. The Babylonian exile cured the people of their idolatry, and a new generation returned to the land and to the Lord 70 years later. God's people today also experience God's discipline for their sin. And it can be quite painful at times, but it does bring godly gain. For godly gain, expect some personal pain.